Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, dusting off imprisoned souls, taking forgotten books from the shelves for a look back at how we remember the souls of those who've passed away. And honoring the Church's heroes on the Feast of All Saints, and the Holy Land will soon have its first Christian radio station. We'll hear more about it. In memory of the souls of the faithful departed, liturgies and special memorial celebrations have been held in churches all over the world to mark All Souls Day. Celebrations because for Catholics, and for all Christians for that matter, our life in Christ just begins after death. Here at Vatican Radio, it's no different. A special memorial mass for All Souls was celebrated in the Chapel of the Annunciation just downstairs.
If I err in belief that the souls of men are immortal, I gladly err.
One century before the birth of Jesus, Roman orator, philosopher, and statesman Marcus Tullius Cicero spoke thus of his belief in life after death.
Nor do I wish that this error, which gives me pleasure, to be wrested from me while I live.
With the birth and death of Jesus just over 100 years after Cicero, life everlasting for departed souls was no longer a theory for the growing Christian community. Jesus' death on the cross and his eternal sacrifice in the Eucharist brought with them true salvation and eternity. Centuries later, the 19th century British author Samuel Butler once wrote, "Books are like imprisoned souls till someone takes them down from a shelf and frees them." Well, Jill Bevilacqua has done just that for us in these reflections on the day the Church remembers All Souls. She begins by looking into the Victorian era bookshelves, dusting off this hymn by the 17th century nonconformist churchman Richard Baxter.
Christ, who knows all his sheep, will all in safety keep. He will not lose one soul, nor ever fail us, nor we the promised goal, though hell assail us. Take home the wandering sheep, for thou hast sought it. This soul in safety keep, for thou hast bought it.
The Victorians were much preoccupied with death, which was ever present in their lives. But they accepted the inevitable while looking for the Christian meaning. "Holy bells are slowly tolling over buried men," wrote late Victorian George MacDonald in a poem about autumn. But he also looked at the wagons rolling home with laden grain.
Autumn's sun is sinking, pinking into winter's night, and our hearts are thinking, thinking of the cold and flight. Our life sun is slowly going down the hill of might. but the vanished corn is lying in rich golden glooms. In the churchyard, all the sighing is above the tombs. Spring will come, slow lingering, opening buds of faith. Man goes forth to meet his spring through the door of death.
And as for those who have gone through that door, let's listen to the words of a 5th century Syrian poet, known as Romanos the Melodious, considered the greatest poet of the Byzantine Church. He preached entirely in verse, with a frequent refrain which the people were invited to repeat to express their own assent.
We weep, thinking of death and those who are dead. But we should not, for we know from where they have gone and where they are now and in whose hands they rest. They have departed from this ephemeral life, freed from their pains. They are at rest, waiting to be illumined by God. He who holds them in his hand is the friend of men, who has taken away their ephemeral garments to reclothe them in a body of eternity. Why then do we mourn without reason? Why do we not believe Christ, who has said, "He who believes in me will never die"? For even if he should see corruption, after the corruption, without change, man will be remade and will rise up, saying, "You are the life and the resurrection."
A gentle poem by Cristina Rossetti takes a different view of corruption from the usual gloomy one, with a suggestion for the mourner which is almost modern, though she was writing over a century ago.
Remember me when I am gone away, gone far away into the silent land, when you can no more hold me by the hand, nor I half turn to go, yet turning stay. Remember me when no more day by day you tell me of our future that you planned. Only remember me. You understand it will be late to counsel then or pray. Yet if you should forget me for a while, and afterwards remember, do not grieve. For if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once I had, better by far you should forget and smile than that you should remember and be sad.
In recent times, our attitudes and habits regarding mourning have changed considerably. Black is no longer worn universally. Often only the merest suggestion that a person is in mourning is evidenced on his or her clothing. And in our commemorations of the dead, the gloomy aspect has been softened, as we can read in the liturgical year.
As in all masses of the dead, purple vestments may be worn on this day instead of black. The liturgy of the Mass for the dead has been especially enriched by the addition of 4 prefaces of Christian death to the ancient preface of the dead. The new liturgy is determined to express more clearly the paschal character of Christian death, and instead of grieving, as others do who have no hope, to proclaim the paschal mystery of Christ as the foundation of our hope. For this reason, the ancient sequence Dies Irae has been eliminated, along with other texts in which fear at the thought of a grim judgment by God obscures the radiant light of faith in the resurrection.
We tend often to think that certain days in the liturgical calendar have always been there. But All Souls' Day was not inaugurated until the year 998, when Abbot Odo of Cluny ordered all the monasteries under his authority to celebrate a festal memorial of all the faithful departed. And he added,
If anyone else follows the example of our faith-inspired innovation, may he share in the good prayers of all.
The idea spread quickly through France, England, and Germany, but, writes our liturgist,
it was accepted in Italy, and especially at Rome, only in the 13th century. At the end of the 15th century, the Dominicans of Valencia in Spain made it a custom for all their priests to celebrate three masses on this day. Benedict XIV approved this practice in 1748 and extended the privilege to all priests of Spain, Portugal, and Latin America. Benedict XV extended it still further in 1915 to all priests of the Church.
And although he need not use it, a priest still has this privilege today. The new Missal of 1970 introduced another change. Whereas before, if All Souls' Day fell on a Sunday, the Sunday was to be given precedence, now the precedence is given to All Souls' Day. And surely that is as it should be, for as the liturgical year puts it, this day is a memorial of a unique kind. And perhaps we should remember that we did not invent commemoration of the dead. The pagans of antiquity kept fixed memorial days for their dead, we read. For example, the Roman Parentalia, the festival in honour of dead relatives. Christians initially retained such customs insofar as these did not seem incompatible with their faith. And so the process of Christianisation of commemoration of the dead was a gradual one. And as J. A. Jungmann writes,
all of these fixed days for the memorial of the dead, along with the ritual solemnization of the day of burial, derive from pre-Christian tradition, with the celebration of the Eucharist taking the place of ancient sacrifice for the dead, and sometimes, perhaps, of the refrigerium too.
And what was the refrigerium but the memorial meal for the dead? Do we not still consume funeral meats? And this custom of giving a feast at funerals also came to us from the Romans. But not only did they feast the friends of the deceased, they also distributed food to the persons employed. Maybe we still have a few lessons to learn from the ancients. D.H. Lawrence, who lived in Italy in the early part of the 20th century, wrote two poems about All Souls' Day. Here is Giorno dei Morti.
Along the avenue of cypresses, all in their scarlet cloaks and surplices of linen, go the chanting choristers, the priests in black and gold, the villagers. And all along the path to the cemetery, the round dark heads of men crowd silently, and black-scarved faces of womenfolk wistfully watch at the banner of death and the mystery. And at the foot of a grave a father stands with sunken head and forgotten folded hands. And at the foot of a grave a mother kneels with pale shut face, nor either hears nor feels the coming of the chanting choristers. Between the avenue of cypresses, the silence of the many villages, the candle flames beside the surplices.
The other poem, to which he gave the English title of All Souls, began like this.
They are chanting now the service of all the dead, and the village folk outside in the burying ground listen, except those who strive with their dead, reaching out in anguish, yet unable quite to touch them. Those villagers, isolated at the grave, where the candles burn in the daylight and the painted wreaths are propped on end, there, where the mystery starts.
The Church has adapted her liturgy, and we many of our customs. But here in Italy, especially in the villages, many of the old ways linger. The candles still burn in the daylight, and the wreaths are still propped on end, there where the mystery starts.
Thank you.
They were, and still are today, the heroes of the Church, those who lived by the teachings of Christ, and those who were prepared to give their very lives for Him. They are the saints of the Church, who over the last 2,000 years or so have offered an example to Christians of the virtuous way to the Lord's heart and to the kingdom of heaven. Though many of us can lose sight of it if it doesn't fall on a Sunday, each November 1st is a day set aside by the Church to remember and honor all of the saints, the famous and those hardly known down the centuries. Well, here today to reflect with us on this feast day is Father Bernard O'Connor.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here with us
today with your wonderful smile
and happy personality. Listen, October 31st, we have to start
with that. Oh, yes.
Halloween, the night of ghosts, goblins, and witches. And November 1st, though, is the feast for the heroes of the Church, the saints who represent all that is good and virtuous. Quite a contrast, don't you think?
Rather so. But you know, there's a wonderful point that's being illustrated here. Halloween literally means All Hallowed Evening. It's a sacred evening in preparation for the observance of All Saints. And on November 2nd, we have All Souls Day, and these must be taken together. But there's a theory in spirituality that is wonderfully appropriate, that when goodness is highlighted and emphasized in Christian life, evil cannot remain content. That evil will rise to the cause of trying to distort and devastate the holy. And in my honest estimation, the New Testament church and thereafter were very, very conscious of the evil one and of temptation and devastation attempts at the good. So Halloween, in a certain sense, reflects that. If you are going to celebrate saints November 1st, be assured that that will be taken up as a challenge to you from forces that are motivated for causes other than the holy.
But are we giving our kids mixed messages with these fun, partying Halloween nights?
Again, look historically. Historically, throughout the early history of the Church, especially in the Middle Ages, it was connected to a spiritual reality. The mistake we've made and the double messages we send are separating ordinary, quote, secular life and the life in relationship to God. We've made the disconnect in our culture and society. And so naturally, the young people are only going to see it as a festival of good time to kind of joke around, kid, and celebrate in whatever way they choose. It's just like Christmas. We've confused St. Nicholas with a Santa Claus. We have confused the Nativity of Christ with a winter solstice. And so consequently, by divorcing the holy from our ordinary reality, we've completely abdicated all presence for it.
If November 1st, the Feast of All Saints, if it doesn't fall on a Sunday, it's quite likely that people are not going to even realize that it's occurring. Isn't that a very sad reality today?
Oh, it's a tragic reality. When the Holy Father speaks about the issue of secularism and of relativism and these types of terms that he uses so frequently, what he's really saying is we are more and more living in a society which is not only heedless of the holy, but is becoming contemptful of the holy. And this, I think, is a serious tragedy. We can't expect ordinary Catholics to be mindful of the significance of All Saints and then All Souls, when the poor souls can hardly have enough religious knowledge to make the sign of the cross.
Mm. How important is it for us to remember and honor the saints? I mean, if you pick up any book on the saints, you'll see it's full of hundreds and hundreds of names, and literally going back 2,000 years.
Absolutely, absolutely. But let's think of it in terms of your family history. You were just telling me a little while ago where your husband works and where your sister-in-law lives. And these are special relationships in your heart and in your history, as they are in mine and every listener. This is part of our family. And to say that the roots, the origins of significant people in our family history with relationship to us have lost their significance is pitiful, because we're created for relationship. So what these feasts are telling us is that the ongoing relationship with those who preceded us are every bit as intimate to our well-being as are our personal and family relationships, for they are our spiritual family. So great significance.
Whereas we cannot remember our
dear departed, let's say, you know, mm-hmm. a mother or father, grandparents or friends who've died, we can't really pray to them. We certainly can look to the saints for help in our daily lives, can't we?
Very much. I like to tell people that the emphasis isn't so much on praying to as praying with. That in a sense of church as communion, those who we ask to pray for us, to pray with us, accompany us in our own spiritual journey. We see this illustrated wonderfully in the Angelus message for 2008, given by Pope Benedict, in which he reflects upon this continuity of relationship, of role models, of heroes, of persons whom we can look to and say, that's part of my tradition, this is part of my heritage, this is real and tangible. If I may, I'd like to just say that when we look at the lives of the saints, as you're talking about, to give them something of a quality of life, I like to use four terms. That the role of the saints with relationship to us represent incarnation. They make real our faith. They represent imitation, role models of faith. They represent inspiration, giving credibility and enhanced lovability, if you will, of the role models of the church. And then intercession. They respond to our prayer. They reach out to us, just as on All Souls Day, we will reach out on behalf of those whose journey continues toward a fulfillment of sanctity.
We can't, of course, finish this program without mentioning some of the great saints of the church.
There are so many. And people, I think, should certainly remember figures, you know, throughout history, like Joan of Arc, St. Lawrence, the martyr, and so forth. But there are also recently canonized saints or persons proposed for sainthood, which can be a wonderful reminder of the problems that we face that they have also faced. I'm thinking of the canonized Saint Mother Alphonsa, the first saint to be canonized for India, a woman who knew intense physical and mental suffering, who spent most of her 36 years on a sick bed. Well, how many people can identify with that kind of tribulation? Many. I'm thinking of a lady who knew servitude and persecution. Abuse of women, very common. St. Josephine Bakita, born in Darfur in Sudan in 1869, but who literally learned when she discovered the gift of faith in Christ that she could go back to her captors and go back to the people who caused her enormous physical anguish and say, I have a gift for you. Now, there's an example of faith. Lorenzo Garrido, who died only in 1971 from Spain, and who was a journalist afflicted with various paralysis, with blindness. And despite the incredible intensity of his inflictions, every time one aspect of him was taken away, his use of his right arm, then he learned to write with the left. Then he lost both arms, so then he learned to dictate to a secretary. There was an ability to be creative and determined, despite whatever hardship. And that is a wonderful message in our society, where we often feel so depressed and so overwhelmed. There is hope.
And a very warm thanks there to Father Bernard O'Connor. He has to be one of the most enterprising and most energetic people I know. Father Raed Abu Sakhia, the parish priest of Taibe in Palestine, is a former spokesman for the Latin Patriarchate in Jerusalem. He's a big event organizer, fundraiser, and the proud sponsor of the town's impressive olive press and farmers' cooperative that sells olive oil, soaps, and candles to European supermarket chains. Well, his newest project, starting up the first Christian radio station in the Holy Land with Vatican Radio's help. He told me more about it on a recent visit here to Vatican Radio.
We need a Christian voice in the Holy Land. We need to give a Christian voice to the Christians in the Holy Land, especially to cover the whole diocese, which extends over Jordan, Palestine, and Israel. And since there are different radio stations and TV stations in the region, we don't have any Christian radio station. I wanted to do that in Taipei. especially that Taibe is the last and the only entirely Christian village in the whole land, as you know. And it is located at the top of a mountain, 1,000 meters above the level of the Mediterranean Sea, so we can't cover the whole region. Our target is the Arabic-speaking community, of course, and we will transmit from Taibe. Hopefully that we will cover from Amman to Gaza to Tel Aviv, almost the whole region, and of course Jerusalem will be included. This will be a Christian voice, but a different voice, which means a voice of peace, of hope, of dialogue, of reconciliation. We will be open to everybody, to the other churches in the whole land, so we will have we will give space and time for all the news and celebrations of the other churches, and we will invite them. We have already contacted them to have their own programs on our radio station. It will be open also to the other religions existing in the whole land, mainly Jews and Muslims, and we will try to be a bridge. Because a Christian who is not a bridge is not a Christian.
And how many people do you think would be listening to your programs?
We don't know exactly, but we have to start. I think with the publicity we can do in our parishes, most of our Christians will listen to us. Now they are watching the Lebanese TV station Noursat Tel Lumière. And I saw when I visit the families that they are opening it day and night because they have the news of the Catholics or the Christians of the whole world. And it reaches every single home. I will not pretend that we will reach every single home, but we can do that because in all the other radio stations, they don't hear anything about religion, anything about Christianity, about the Christian, Christian faith.
And do you think that Muslims will find something attractive in this broadcast?
We hope that at least we will transmit some music, some songs, religious songs, and also news. We will not enter in politics, to tell you the truth, because we don't have problems. We have already enough problems. But social issues will be discussed. Direct programs, live programs will be there. So maybe some Christians, some Muslims will hear also our voice.
Father Raed hopes to launch the first broadcasts of his new radio station this upcoming Christmas Eve. We wish him all the best. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.